The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter number 31, text number 20, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on June 13th, 2009, in Canberra, Australia.
So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter number 31, text number 20.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Appahatta sakalaisha namalatmani.
Avita avita aviratam medita bhavano pahuta.
Nija jana vashagatvam atmano yam.
Sarati Chidravad Akshara Sathamhi.
Appahata Sakalaisha Namalatmani.
Aviratam Edita Bhavano Pahuta.
Nija jana vashagatvam atmano yam.
Nasarati chidravad akshara satam hi.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Being completely cleansed of all material desires, the devotees are freed from all mental contamination. Thus, they can always think of the Lord constantly and address Him very feelingly. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, knowing Himself to be controlled by His devotees, does not leave them for a second, just as the sky overhead never becomes invisible. Purport. It is clear from the previous verse that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Janardana, is very quickly satisfied by the activities of His devotees. And the pure devotee is always absorbed in the thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As stated, Shrinvatang Svakata Krishna. By always thinking of Krishna, the pure devotee's heart is freed from all kinds of desires. In the material world, the heart of the living entity is filled with material desires. When the living entity is cleansed, he does not think of anything material. As the mind is completely cleansed, one attains the perfectional stage of mystic yoga, for then the yogi always sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead within his heart. As soon as the Lord is seated within the heart of the devotee cannot be contaminated by the material modes of nature. As long as one is under the control of the material modes, he desires so many things and makes so many plans for material sense enjoyment. But as soon as the Lord is perceived in the heart, all material desires vanish. When the mind is completely free from material desire, the devotee can think of the Lord constantly. In this way, he becomes completely dependent upon the lotus feet of the Lord. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prays, Hai nanda tanuja kinkarang patitang mang bishame bhavam budo
Kribayatava para pankaja stita duli sandrisham vichintaya.
My dear Lord, I am your eternal servant, but somehow or other I have fallen into the ocean of this material world. Kindly pick me up and fix me as a speck of dust in your lotus feet. Shakshashtaka 5. Similarly, Shilanartam Dastakur prays, Aha Prabhu Nanda Sutta Vrishabhanu Sutta Jutta Karana Karaya Karaha Ebhara Naratama Dasakai Nate Lila Rangapai Toma Vina Ke Ache Amara. My dear Lord, you are now present with the daughter of King Vrishabhanu, Srimati Radharani. Now, though both of you please be merciful upon me, do not kick me away, because I have no shelter other than you. In this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes dependent on his devotee. The Lord is invincible, yet he is conquered by his pure devotee. He enjoys being dependent on his devotee, just as Krishna enjoyed being dependent on the mercy of Mother Yashoda. Thinking himself dependent on the devotee gives the Supreme Lord great enjoyment. Sometimes a king may engage a joker, and in the process of joking, the king is sometimes insulted. The king, however, enjoys these activities. Everyone worships the Supreme Lord with great reverence. Therefore, the Lord sometimes wants to enjoy the chastisement of his devotees. In this way, the relationship eternally existing between the Lord and his devotees is fixed, just like the sky overhead.
Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Shcha Shri Rupa Sagrajata Sahagana Raguna Tanvitam Tam Sajiva Sadaita Savadutam Prijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakonvitamscha.
So that's the fact, as Prabhupada explains. Sometimes the kings do that. In Bengal, there was one joker, his name was Gopal Bhan. And the king would joke with him. And the joker, he would insult the king, but the king would enjoy it. The king said, he said to Gopal Bhan, he said, "What's the difference between you and a fool?" Gopal Bhan said, "About 3 feet." So in this way, he insulted the king that he was a fool, you see. But the king was having great fun with the joker. So in a similar way, Krishna enjoys becoming subordinate to his devotees. But we cannot artificially jump to that position at this point in our neophyte stage, you see. That I feel like chastising Krishna today, you see. This is for the pure devotees. Our position is now is not to give chastisement to Krishna. As I was explaining last night, but Krishna, why you did this to me, why you did that to me, you see. We are right now caught up in material sense gratification. So it's not, if we chastise Krishna now, it'll be over our sense gratification. So we're not qualified to chastise Krishna. You have to be on the level of Mother Yasoda to chastise Krishna. So we have to take the position now to be chastised by Krishna. That is our position. To be chastised by Krishna, to be chastised by spiritual master. That is our position right now, you see. And Prabhupada actually told us, he said, the disciple who is more chastised, he is advanced. In other words, the one who can take that chastisement in the proper spirit, you see. This is Lord Chaitanya, he was chastised by his spiritual master. You were a fool. You're not qualified to study Vedanta. You just better chant Hare Krishna, you see. He took it. He didn't say, what do you mean? I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What are you talking about? You see, he didn't become angry at his spiritual master. What are you doing chastising me? Don't you know who I am? You see. So a disciple shouldn't think, well, doesn't Guru Maharaj know who I am? I have a PhD, I'm an engineer, you know, I have a house, I have a car, I have a family, I'm a big man. You see, no. Before the spiritual master, one becomes humble. Lord Chaitanya showed that example. So this humbling ourselves before the spiritual master and before the Vaishnava is a very important thing, you see. We have to learn how to become humble. What does that mean practically? It means offering all respect to others without expecting any respect for oneself. That is the key. Not that, well, you know, I'll respect you if you respect me. I want to see that you respect me first before I respect you. See, that's material consciousness. Spiritual life means I offer all respect to you. Even if you spit in my face, I offer you all respect. That is spiritual life. That is humility. You may say, but if you do that, people are just going to step all over you and take advantage of you and exploit you like anything. Actually, the real benefit of taking that humble mood is then you can really chant Hare Krishna. We're trying to chant Hare Krishna, trying to perfect the chanting of the holy names. Until we come to that point of seeing everyone as Krishna's part and parcel and respecting them as such, we won't be able to chant Hare Krishna purely. We won't be able to. And we won't taste the full nectar of the name. We'll feel something lacking in our japa. We will. So we have to learn how to respect all living entities as Krishna's parts and parcels. Even if he is enemy, you see, I still respect him as Krishna's parts and parcels. Of course, that doesn't mean we allow people to exploit us also at the same time. We have our service to do for Krishna. And if someone is interfering with that service, we do not allow them to interfere with that service. That's a fact. There was one, you know the story of the cobra who became a devotee? There was a cobra, and he became a devotee. You know that cobra snake? Oh, a big snake. You know that cobra snake? Do you know the cobra snake? Big, huge snake. He'll wrap around you and he'll kill you by his. So you got to stay away from the cobra snake. Very, very dangerous snake. So, the cobra snake, he became a devotee. So now he's no longer a threat to the villagers, you see. Before that, everyone is afraid. Oh, cobra, cobra, cobra. See, running away. Get away. Cobra is here. Go hide. But now the cobra, he's become a Vaishnava. He's become disciple of Narad Muni, you see. So now there's no fear of the cobra. So what do the little children do? Those little children are very nice. You know what those little children did? They started throwing rocks at him. Oh, now he's a devotee. He won't bite us. Throw rocks at him. They were harassing that cobra. He became a gentle Vaishnava, and now they're exploiting him and harassing him, you see. So he went to his Guru Maharaj. Guru Maharaj, I can't bite anybody. Now I'm a Vaishnava, you know. I have to be humble and respectful to everyone. But now they're exploiting me. They're throwing rocks at me. It's horrible, Guru Maharaj. What should I do? So Narada Muni advised his disciple, the cobra. He said, you simply show your hoods, but don't bite, you see. So there's nothing wrong if a devotee shows his strength, you see. If something is interfering with his service, he can show his strength. But within his heart, he always has all respect for all living entities. All respect for all living entities. Seeing them as Krishna's parts and parcel. And because the devotee loves everyone, he truly loves every single living entity, seeing them as Krishna's parts and parcels. He sees Krishna within everyone and everyone within Krishna. So he loves everyone. And therefore, because everyone is very, very, very dear to the devotee, what is the result? He becomes dear to everyone. That is the result. The devotee becomes very, very dear to everyone. Dira, dira, janapriyo. You see, the six Goswamis. They were dear to everyone. The gentle, even the Gundas loved the Goswamis, the ruffians, you see. They love the Goswamis also. Actually, Sanatana Goswami was so gentle and so kind. In Vrindavan, the householders who were living there. You know how householders, sometimes the husband and wife, they fight? That ever happened to you, Mom? They have disagreement. You see, husband and wife have disagreement, you see. Sometimes householders have that problem, you see. Fighting between husband and wife. Quarrel, you see. So, they would come to Sanatana Goswami. He was the marital counselor. Can you imagine? He served the villagers by being a marital counselor. Prabhupada explains. They would come to him and they would say, the husband would give his story, you see. The wife would give her story. And he would say, you are right and you are wrong. And they would say, whatever verdict he gave, the husband was right, the wife would accept. If he told the wife was right, the husband would accept. Because everyone knew he was a non-envious well-wisher, you see. Everyone would take his opinion, his authority. Even on marital affairs, you see, he was consulted. So, the devotees of the Lord, you see, those who are actually absorbed in Krishna Prem, the pure devotees, they are naturally very, very dear to everyone because they're always thinking of how they can help everyone to become happy. They have no desire other than they have no personal desire for sense enjoyment. The only desire of the pure devotees is to make every man, woman, and child on the face of this planet completely blissful. That's all they want to see. They have no desire for wealth, for women, for followers, for even getting out of the cycle of birth and death. They simply want to see that every man, woman, and child, and even the animals can become happy by being properly fed. You see? So, a pure devotee is very, very rare. If we can have the association of a pure devotee, that is the greatest blessing. Sa mahatma sudurlabha, such a great soul, you see, who has completely gone beyond the platforms of jnana, yoga, karma. That person is very, very rare, whose material desires are zero, completely extinguished. That person is very powerful, Jagat Guru. He can deliver the whole world. Just by his mere presence in this universe, he can deliver the entire universe. That's it. That is the pure devotee. Prabhupada explains it like that. that a person who is purely chanting the holy names without any offense, he becomes Jagad Guru, and under his influence, the entire universe will take up Krishna consciousness. So, what do us struggling neophytes do, you see? How does this relate to us struggling neophytes? You know, we can hardly even fix our mind on the holy name. Our mind is dancing like a monkey from one branch to another. Every time we try to chant our japa, you know, the mind's going here, there, everywhere. You see? What about us poor struggling neophytes? What hope is there for us, you see? Well, there's all hope, you see. We have Prabhupada's mercy, we have the Vaishnava's mercy, we have our spiritual master's mercy. We just have to pray to Krishna to help us become absorbed in chanting the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. By the power, that great power, the wonderful nectar which is available in the holy names, gradually we will have a transformation of consciousness. If one will simply take up this process, the basic principles that Prabhupada has given of chanting 16 quality rounds every day, avoiding the offenses as much as possible, and strictly following the rules and regulations, no illicit sex, no meat eating, no intoxication, and no gambling, then over a period of time, just as drops of water wear away the stone, all that lust, that anger, that greed, that madness, that illusion, that envy, which is encrusted deeply, deeply encrusted in our psyches, in our consciousness, you see, that will be cleansed away. Listen to me. Listen to me. You understand these points? You know you have a better brain than we do. You little kids, you have a bigger, more fertile brain than we do. You can learn much faster than we can. Therefore, I'm asking you that you listen very carefully to every word I'm saying. This class is especially for you, you see, because you will get 100 times more benefit than we do. We adults, our brains are slow, you see. You little kids, you have big, big brain. So you listen carefully. You turn and face me. And you listen carefully to what I'm saying. Because by hearing this class, you will advance very quickly. If you absorb yourself in hearing, you will advance quickly in the pathway back to Krishna. In this way, we want you to be our leader in the future. You see, when we're a bunch of old senior citizens, you'll be the powerful Vaishnava. That's our hope, you see. You will be our leader. You see, we want to train you to be our future leader. Yes. So you have to listen. Would you like to be our leader? Yes. If you hear very carefully, you'll become our leader in the future. You're the future leader. You can become a powerful world leader if you will hear very carefully these teachings. You see? We want you to listen very carefully because we have great hope for you. You understand? So in this way, if we can truly absorb ourselves in hearing, you see, hearing these transcendental messages which are coming to us by the mercy of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, if we will very intensely absorb ourselves in hearing these transcendental messages, then we will experience a transformation of consciousness. We will be delivered from this hellish, nightmarish quagmire called the mental platform. And will actually become awakened in Krishna consciousness. There's nothing sweeter. I guarantee you there is nothing sweeter than awakening one dormant Krishna consciousness. You see? Gyanena tutat agyanam yesham nashitam atmanaha tesham madityam vajjyanam prakashayati tatpadam. When one becomes enlightened with that knowledge by which nescience is destroyed, then his knowledge reveals everything. As the sun lights up everything in the daytime. Do you like it when the sun comes up in the morning? Tell me. Do you like it when the sun comes up in the morning? Isn't it nice when the sun comes up? You can have the Krishna sun rising in your heart, you see. By intensely hearing these messages, sitting nicely like a yogi, Sitting nice. You know how to sit like a yogi? You can sit like a yogi. By hearing, sitting very nicely like a yogi and focusing your attention, you see, you will have the Krishna sun rising in your heart and everything will become known to you. Everything will become crystal clear, you see. This is the process of Krishna consciousness. So, I can ask now if there's any questions.
You're giving the example how Shyam's brain was developing and he could be a leader. What age do you recommend children start chanting Hare Krishna?
The main thing is to get them absorbed in hearing and doing service. They're not, little children really can't take up japa when they're too small. But the main thing is, when there's ever a class, have your children sitting there. In other words, children, a young child can enjoy doing anything. For him, the whole world, they come out of the womb, the whole world is an amazing place. I mean, anything is amazing to them. The whole world is like a wonderland when they first come out, the little kids. So when they're at the youngest possible age, right out of the womb, as soon as they're born, have the baby there in the class, hearing the lecture. Let them grow up hearing, to teach them to sit nicely on your knee as they get big enough, and then hear the class. If you have to give them prasadam to stop them from crying in the class, then give them some prasadam. Let them be addicted to hearing the classes. And then when you're doing service, just like I see a parent will come forward and have their child bow down to me. That's the wrong way, you see. The parent should bow down and have the child bow down along with the parent. The parent have to always be showing the example, you see. Not that the parent does one thing and engage the kid in something else. The parents should always be engaged in devotional service and engage the children doing it with you. You know how a little girl can have a toy stove and enjoy her little toy stove, you see. You, when you're cutting vegetables for the Sunday feast, you can have a little toy knife and a little toy cutting board and some useless vegetable scraps and let the little child think, oh, I'm cutting vegetables too, you see. In this way, engage the children in devotional service. It's more attractive than any nonsense, toys or television, you see. Devotional service itself is all relishable. It's the supreme nectar. So let the children taste it. Engage, you do devotional service and engage them in doing it with you. They say, well, you have to bond with your children, you know. My father, he wanted to bond with me, so he used to take me out in the front yard to throw a baseball back and forth. I hated it. I'm not into sports. But they advise you have to bond with your son, you see, by doing things together, father and son. So why not bond with your children by doing devotional service together, you see? Cutting vegetables for the feast, washing the pots. Let him also try to wash a pot somehow. He said, give a little stool, he can stand up at the sink, he can also try to wash some pots. These are fun activities. We think it's not the funnest thing. Actually, devotional service is the supreme nectar. Any devotional activity, washing pots, cutting vegetables, it's all supreme nectar. So don't deny the children the nectar of Krishna consciousness. You take up the menial activities of devotional service and engage the children in doing it with you. Engage them with you in everything. Keep them, you be fully engaged, and they're right there with you, doing devotional service side by side. That's the way to do it. That's the way to do it. We've seen practically in Austin the result of doing this. You see. This little boy, Kirtan, at the age of 3, he was speaking philosophy and backing it up with Shastra. And now at the age of 6, when I go on my walk, I mentioned last night, when I go on my walk around the neighborhood, in the morning walk after Bhagavatam class, he comes running out the door and comes with me the whole way asking one philosophical question after another philosophical question. At age 6, you see. So because he was raised from, as soon as he came out of the womb, he's in there in the lap hearing the classes. Now he loves the. He asks more intelligent questions than the adult. Little tiny boy. I see. So it's not that, devotional service is for adults and the kids have to. They had this idea now in ISKCON, you got to the Sunday school, the kids are a disturbance, just put them in the back room where they can run wild, It's the wrong idea for training the children. The children should be trained to sit in. Prabhupada never had a back room for the kids to run and scream during the classes. The children would be there in the temple rooms with the adults hearing the classes. And that's the way, by that hearing, just as Prahlad Maharaj became enlightened within the womb, and just as Sukadeva also became enlightened within the womb, these little children, if they're engaged in hearing these lectures, lecture after lecture after lecture, you'll be amazed how they become highly learned in this philosophy at a very, very young age. A very young age. They just have to be trained to sit down. It's like we're trying to train this wonderful little sadhu here. We're trying to train this wonderful little sadhu how to sit very nicely, give him all encouragement, you see. This wonderful little sadhu, we're giving him all encouragement to sit here nicely like a yogi and sit still and face the speaker, not put your back to the speaker, you see. How to sit still, put your face to the speaker and absorb yourself in hearing the word, you see. We're trying to give him all encouragement. Because we know if he can develop a habit of sitting and hearing, he'll become very highly advanced in transcendental knowledge, even before he starts attending public school. You see? And that'll protect him from all the indoctrination of the public schools. We can give him a very powerful education, even before he hits the karmi education. So, a very important thing. But if they just run around and scream, they're going to miss the most... powerful years of their lives for becoming educated is preschool. That's when they can learn the most and the fast. That's how little children, they can learn two or three languages. Even without studying them, just by being at the young age, just by hearing it, they can learn languages. Now, if you and I want to learn two or three languages, we could spend 20 years and not become fluent. But in just two or three years, a little child, by hearing it, he becomes fluent, the pronunciation, everything perfect, you see, as a native speaker. So this young age is very important. As soon as they come out of the womb, immediately engage them. Even within the womb, the mother should be engaged in as much chanting as possible. There should be tapes playing, the mother should be chanting, because that child's getting the benefit of all those vibrations. So in this way, I hope that has helped you a little bit to understand. Yeah. This process works. Krishna consciousness does work. It's not some sentimental religion. This is a science. This is a very accurate, it's more accurate than any of the material sciences. More precise. If you take these principles and you'll apply them, you'll see the result is amazing. Absolutely amazing. In yourself, in your children, and in the human society. Any other questions? Yes. Yes.
How gradual is this process? I mean,
that's up to you. It could take millions of lifetimes, or you could finish it up in this lifetime. And there's an example of one person who became a pure devotee within 1 second. His name was Kadvanga Maharaj. You've heard about Kadvanga Maharaj? Yes, he's a great Vedic king. He very powerful Kshatriya. At that time, he was earthly king, but the heavenly planets were being attacked by the demons. Sometimes, you see, there's not even peace of mind in the heavenly planets because sometimes the demons overrun the heavenly planets. So the demigods, even the powerful demigod generals, could not stand up against the onslaught of the demons. So they begged Kadvanga Maharaj, "You come and help us. We need your help. Please, the demons are overtaking the heavenly kingdom. Please, come and help us." He said, "Okay." So he fought very valiantly for many, 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 many long years. And he completely defeated the demons, and the demigods were so pleased. They said, "Kadvanga Maharaj, we're so pleased. Any benediction that's within our power, we will give you. Just tell us what you want." So he could have asked for unlimited opulence, unlimited power, so many material opulences he could have gotten from the demigods. You know what he said? He said, just tell me when I'm going to die. That's all I want to know. And they said, oh, actually your death is just now coming. He said, thank you. He took shelter of Krishna and went back to Godhead immediately. So Prabhupada gives us an example how within 1 minute you can become a pure devotee of Krishna, you see. So we may think, well, it's not possible for me to do that. So, you know, I'll just take a slow, gradual thing, you know, maybe 50 years, maybe 50 lifetimes. No, here's the thing. You should strive to become a pure devotee at every second. Because if you keep striving like that, that's going to speed up how soon it'll happen. Every one of us, if we're intelligent, will strive for pure bhakti at every second. Krishna, my dear Lord, please bless me that I can become your pure devotee right here, right now. And what's the best prayer for begging for pure bhakti? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. But what about my material attachments? I'm not ready to give those up yet. Well, wait a minute. Why should I hang on to them? Are they helping me? Are they making me happy? No. They're my very source of misery. Do I not trust Krishna that he'll take care of me? He'll take care of my relationships with my wife, my kids, my husband, my friends, my family, my job? Do I think Krishna will devastate my material situation if I surrender to him? Of course not. Actually, Krishna will personally see that all our material necessities are there and all our spiritual necessities are there if we fully surrender to him. Ananyas chintayanto mam ye jana paryapasate tesham nityabhiyuktanam yogachemam vahamyaham. For those who are completely sold out to me, exclusively dedicated to me, with their every thought, their every word, their every deed, and every time, place, and situation, for those people, I give them whatever they need. I personally provide whatever they need in all times, in all places, in all situations. So you don't have to worry about my job, my this, my that. Just fully surrender to Krishna. And you'll be in a better situation you could ever be than if you tried to do what was her name? Draupadi? Yes. If you try to follow Draupadi's method, praying for pure bhakti on the one hand and then trying to hold on to your material attachments on the other hand. She tried to do that. Krishna saved me, and oh, I got a hole in my sari on the other hand. Did it work? No. She was being disrobed, you see. But when she said, what can I do? What with my strength I can do? A woman against these powerful kshatriyas? Forget it. It's hopeless. Krishna, both hands to Krishna. Then she had an unlimited sari, you see. So we simply say, Krishna, I've been trying to balance it out here with some material life and spiritual life, and just puts me in this, you know, in Draupadi, in a Draupadi phase one syndrome. Draupadi phase one is spirit, you know, Krishna and Maya, you see. That's phase one of Draupadi, and phase two is only Krishna. So the phase one Draupadi syndrome, you can write a whole book about them. The Draupadi phase one syndrome, where I try to do material and spiritual at the same time. You see. I give some of my faith to Krishna and some of my faith to the material energy, you see. After all, I mean, if I don't make money, how am I going to survive, right? When was the last time you ate money? You took one of those beautiful Australian notes and cut it up with some, you know, salad dressing, and had a, you know, Australian dollar salad. When was the last time you did that? You don't depend on money for your survival. You depend on Krishna. So why not completely surrender to Krishna? Is there any reason not to fully surrender to Krishna? You think you'll lose something if you fully surrender to Krishna? What do you think?
I still feel worse.
You think it's okay?
It still feels.
Huh?
Yeah.
Just see. You have to be a pure devotee for his sake. How you can hold on to that ridiculous idea? That's not good for your son. You have to think of his welfare also. You have to cultivate pure bhakti. You have to drive this out of your head that, if I fully surrender to Krishna, how will I survive? Actually, you'll survive much better than you do now. As I explained last night, that if that person who controls and owns absolutely everything within the entire existence is your personal supplier, you won't lack anything. Prabhupada said that, he elaborated on that shloka 922. He said that Krishna becomes, he will personally deliver to your door whatever you need. So you think, oh, I have to struggle in the workplace, 10 hours a day just so I can eat, We don't say to quit your job. We're not saying that. And become a wandering mendicant. We're not saying that at all. You keep your job. But understand, your job is not what's maintaining you. You're being maintained by Krishna. Eko bahunam yovadadati kama. You see? Actually, when the householder works a job, actually that's his, when a pure devotee householder works a job, that's his kindness. He's purifying that workplace by his presence there. He's purifying that company by engaging their money in Krishna's service. That's his kindness. He's acting in an ordinary way to show an example for the people and engaging everything in Krishna's service to show an example. So anyway, you should cultivate pure devotional service. Beg for it every day. My dear Lord, please bless me. I can be completely surrendered unto you. Just try it. You'll like it. And just try that. Just pray that way, even if it seems artificial. My dear Lord, please bless me. I can become your completely surrendered devotee right now. I can completely become free of all material desires and be totally surrendered unto you. Please bless me. I can do it right now, this very instant. Just keep begging Krishna. You know what? He'll help you. He's been waiting for thousands of lifetimes when you will sincerely try to fully surrender to him. He'll give you all help, all encouragement, all blessings, all mercy if you start praying that way. So any other questions? Everybody's ready to adjourn now? Or if somebody has some questions more? Of course, we have more sessions coming up. The class normally ends at 8:30.
Can go on a little bit longer.
Can go on a little bit longer. The president has authorized. Krishna is representative here. The president has authorized this. Is this little boy have any? What is his name?
Shyam.
Shyam, do you have any questions? I'd really like you to sit up here with the men, I like the men to sit up front. Why don't you come sit with the men up here? You can come sit here. I'd like you to sit right here. I don't know if he'll do it, but we'll try, Now he's going into hiding. Okay, does anybody else have any questions? Shyam, you can come here. You sit here. I want you to sit close to me. You're a great devotee. I'd like you to sit close to me so I get your mercy. Come on. Come on. Come, you sit here with me. I'll give you a nice seat. You come sit up here. You'd like to sit with me? You'd like to sit with me? All right. So any other questions? Yes. About what?
Parents engaging in devotional.
Yeah,
services,
the parents engaging the children.
Setting good examples for children and so forth. Mm-hmm. Generally, we find that even in our ISKCON movement, you see, when children are young and dependent, and if the parents are performing devotional service sincerely, while they are dependent, they will follow their parents nicely. But when they grow older and independent, move into teenage age, and become independent, they live their own life. Not necessarily they show the same level of commitment to devotional life. Is that your observation as well while traveling around the world?
Is that my observation?
Yeah,
it's
and
definitely.
What can we do about that?
What's he asking now?
He's asking that in a childhood, when they are dependent on the parents, they may engage in the devotional service, but when they come to the age of being a teenager or become Yeah.
Well, I don't see in our society that the parents are doing a very good job of engaging them when they're small. And that's why when they're teenagers, they're never really properly engaged in at all. That's what I see in our society now.
There are a few devotees who are properly engaged. They are good devotees. There is one Namath.
My observation is that generally the parents, and I'm not saying the children are that well engaged even at the very young age, and that's why when they become teenagers, they go far away. That's my observation. If the child is given very good first-class training, that he's taught to sit in here and he becomes enlivened by hearing the philosophy, then his chances of making it through the teenage years are very high. And there's a good example that that boy, Ravi Gupta. Yeah, but I'm speaking. You can give those examples, but I'm not going to give those examples. You know more than me about those. But that boy, Ravi Gupta, his parents didn't send him to public school. They kept him home. The mother homeschooled him. And at age 13, he entered the university. You see, 13 years old in the university. You see, and he's a very Krishna conscious man now. He's a Sanskrit professor at a university in Florida. And he takes time off to go teach also in Radhadesh and at our Bhaktivedanta College there. So the parents, the mother, instead of thinking, well, you know, why don't we both work? We can make more money. If husband and wife both have a job, we can make more money. But the mother said, no, I will stay home and I will give homeschooling to the boys. That's not an easy thing, to sit there hours a day homeschooling your own children. But she did that. She did that austerity. And just see the result. So what I've observed is that the children that go away in their teenagers, they really didn't get that solid of a foundation when they were little. They weren't taught to sit and hear the Bhagavatam class and absorb, you see. They were restless in the classes. They wanted to get away. They wanted to run away. They didn't have a taste for hearing the Bhagavatam. If one gets actually a taste for hearing the Bhagavatam, then that would be very difficult for them to not remain Krishna conscious. If as a young child they really relished hearing the Bhagavatam, they asked questions, they applied it, you see. They should be given full-on training, just like a Prahlad Maharaj, you see. Become fixed up advanced devotees in the young age. Not that that's for adults, you know. Krishna consciousness is for adults, it's not for kids. We shouldn't think that way. We should think they have the most fertile brain, more so than we. They can learn. So if we can train them to where they're actually absorbing the teachings that Prabhupada is giving, then the results will be absolutely amazing. It'd be absolutely amazing. So I don't think we're doing a very good job in our society of training the children. I don't see it. I don't see it. Throughout ISKCON, it's a problem all over the whole movement. These next generation are supposed to be the future leaders, but I see them having illicit sex, taking drugs, and so many things. They grow up.
Sometimes, I mean, I have had few examples at my work and also in our community that if we try to be too strict with our children, if we bring them up under proper discipline, and when they grow old, they rebel. They become.
That happens if it's that sort of tendency happens if the parent doesn't. If you say, oh, you have to do this, you have to do that, yeah, then they'll rebel. But if you do it, as an acharya, you show the example and you gaze them in doing it with you as their associate, they'll never rebel. Just like that parent who came up, I corrected him. I think it was in, forget where it was. I think it was in Sydney, yeah, a home program. The parent came up and said, told the child, now you bow down to the spiritual master. I looked at that parent. The parent was standing there. They told the kid, now you bow down to the spiritual master. That That sort of training, yes, they will rebel. No doubt. As a little kid, they're forced to bow down. But if the parent bows down and says, oh, let's go bow down to the spiritual master, get his mercy, you see, then the child will never rebel. The parent has to do the devotional service, engage the child in doing it with the parent. And it becomes an adventure, a bonding between the parent and the child, which will never go away through the whole lifetime, like Prabhupada's bond with his father, Guru Mohan Dev, you see. The parent has to be very enthusiastic about devotional service and engage the child, now, let's go do this, you see. An exciting thing. The parent has to be excited about it. And then engage the child in doing this wonderful thing called devotional service. So he's going to go do devotional service now. You see, in this way, they never rebel. The trouble is, we don't have a day. That's the problem. We don't have a day. So how are we going to expect them? We try to force them to have a taste, it won't work. We have to cultivate a taste. We have to have a taste. And then if we have taste, that taste is contagious. Krishna consciousness is a contagious disease. If we truly have it, we adults have it, then we can infect our children with it. It's more powerful than the swine flu. Now they've declared a pandemic, you see. Swine flu pandemic, the first pandemic in decades, you see.
Swine flu.
But we are declaring Krishna consciousness pandemic. You see, we want to infect the whole world with Krishna consciousness. So we have to become infected, and then our children will grow up completely infected with it. Yad yad acharati shrestas tattareve tarojana sayad pramanam kurute lokastad anuvartate. Whatever a great man does, the common people follow in his footsteps. You see, whatever standard he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. Whatever the parents do, you see, whatever standard the parents set by exemplary acts, all the children will pursue. The parents have to be acharyas. You understand? The parents have to be acharyas. That's the key. If we adults become true acharyas, these kids will become even greater acharyas. They will excel us in Krishna consciousness. But if we are not acharyas, we're trying to hold on to our material desires and be like Draupadi, you know, one foot in the Krishna boat and the other foot in the Titanic. One foot in the lifeboat and the other foot in the Titanic. You see, what do we expect from the kid? So it's useless. You know, they'll make a show of devotional service because they're forced to. When they grow up, they'll go away. That's the thing. They'll go away. Who cares for this Hare Krishna? They'll think it's like a cult. You see? We have to be acharyas. We have to be persons, Bhagavatam, living embodiments of these teachings. We have to live the Bhagavatam in 24 hours a day, at home, at the temple, in the commute, at work, in the doctor's office, in line at the grocery store. We have to be living embodiments of these teachings. And then those children will follow us. They will. If we become true acharyas, those children will definitely follow us. Because the world doesn't have acharyas now. These so-called superstars are just rakshasas, you see. Where are the heroes? We need Krishna-conscious heroes on this planet. You see, instead of looking up to the athletes, the rock and roll stars, you see. In the human society, should be looking up to the acharyas, those who are living embodiments of Bhagavatam. That's who should be the heroes. You see. So the child has to become a great hero to his parents. You see, a little child is like that, but we see, they get teenagers, they all those fuddy-duddies, you know, those old fuddy-duddies, you know. But no, if you actually become acharya, those children will worship you the whole life. They worship you. The adult should be worshipable by the children. That's Vedic culture. But not by force. Not that you demand your children to respect you. You should command that respect. And becoming a living embodiment of Bhagavatam. That is required. So any other questions? Yes.
Maharaj said that you have to read Bhagavatam every day, like Nityam Bhagavatam.
That's right.
Like at this point of, we have office job and everything.
All right, then you hear Bhagavatam on your MP3 in your car on your way to work if you don't have any other time to do it. Somehow or other, connect with Bhagavatam every day. Or if you have 5 or 10 minutes even. These books are so powerful, even if you just read one word of these books, you can become delivered from material existence. So, I know, I'm very busy with my writing and but especially when I'm back at our ashram in Austin, where we spend a few months out of the year, I have a regulated time every morning of about 10 or 15 minutes when I work on shlokas. And it's amazing how many, in that 10 or 15 minutes every day, how much I can actually learn and retain. I quote a lot of verses, but it's just from those 10 or 15 minutes. It's not like I spend hours a day trying to, if you just have evens, can squeeze in 10 or 15 minutes every day. You'll be amazed if you do it every day, 10 or 15 minutes of studying the Bhagavatam. You'll be amazed. You should definitely make a project of reading. You have the full Bhagavatam at home? Have you read the whole thing? All right, well, you need to start now. You keep your marker, those little nice handy ribbons are here. You say, okay, I'm going to read the whole Bhagavatam. Even if it's 10 minutes a day, even at the end of the day, 15 minutes before you go to bed at night. You start reading, you keep your marker, go through the whole thing. Go through all the books. You must read all the books. Even if it's just 5 minutes, you can certainly squeeze in 5 minutes or 10 minutes a day. So you should do them. Just by contacting these books, the impression will sit in your heart the whole day. The impression will sit in your heart the whole day. And if you make it even better, you sit with Shyam. You say, Shyam, now it's time for Bhagavatam. And he'll become addicted to it in due course of time. Make it the special treat, like the glob jamun at the end of the day, whenever. You can read Krishna book to him every night, read him to sleep with Krishna book. He'll love it. I remember my mother, she wasn't a devotee, but I remember I was sick one time and she read me that book, The Wizard of Oz. She read me the whole book. I was laying sick in bed. I still remember how my mother read to me. It was a special bond that I had, a feeling I had. My mother read to me when I was sick. If you will read to him Krishna book every night, that's Bhagavatam also. You can do your daily Bhagavatam just by reading Krishna book to Shyam every night, reading to sleep. And he'll become addicted to it. He'll come and bring you and hand you the Krishna book and say, come on, I want it. You do it every day, he'll become addicted to it. You see? So it's just a matter of prioritizing things. If there's a TV in the house, get rid of it. If there's mundane television going on in the house, get the TV and go home today, take it down to the secondhand store and dump it. Get the one-eyed guru out of your house. Sooner the better. As I mentioned last night, I was preaching in one home, and we stayed there a couple of days, actually. And I sat down, I just happened to sit down on a chair in the living room, and the little child went berserko. I couldn't figure, what's going on? This kid is going crazy. I sat down in this chair and he's flipping out. I found out it was his seat that he watched the cartoons on the television. That was his seat from which his little asan from which he watched this. That was his cartoon asan. And I happened to sit on it, you see. So if the little children are growing up watching these mundane cartoons, Daffy Duck and whatever their name is, Donald Duck and Goofy and the Roadrunner, you're killing them. You might as well just take a knife and slash their throat. You see, if you're engaging them watching these mundane television, you might as well just take a knife and cut their throat. What you're doing to them. So get the TV out of the house. The child may flip out. But they'll forget about it after a while and read Bhagavatam instead. In this way, you have to engage the children purely in Krishna consciousness. Get them a Krishna doll, you see. They don't need Barbie. Get them Krishna. Get them a Krishna doll and a Radha doll, you see. Who need Barbie dolls, whatever they have. Stupid things, you see. You need Krishna dolls. Give the child the most wonderful Krishna conscious childhood and they'll never forget you. They'll serve you for their whole life. You give them a wonderful Krishna conscious childhood, they'll always love you and remember you. How nicely my parents blessed me with Krishna consciousness when I was little. They'll never forget you. Always love you with great feeling. They'll always love you very, very intensely if you give them Krishna when they're little. Anything else? Yes.
How important is humbleness and how can we relate to devotional service?
Humbleness will make you or break you. If you have it, you'll achieve bhakti. If you don't have it, you'll never get bhakti. It's everything. Humbleness is everything.
But in case of, like for example, it comes to me, in case of Prahlad Maharaj, Hiranyakashipu created a lot of tortures and all that.
Well, you missed I already answered this earlier in the class. You missed it. I already explained this. Sometimes you, for the sake of your service, you have to show strength, like that cobra who became a devotee. If necessary for one's service, you can take a strong position. But that humble spirit must always be there, of respect for everyone.
But we should always think that we are not the doer. The doer is Krishna. The moment we think we are the doer, pride comes in, and when the pride comes in,
Not being the doer is a fact, but that doesn't mean you neglect your duty. You're supposed to do your duty, aren't you? Does not being the doer mean you're not supposed to do your duty? No, you have to do your duty. Whatever instructions you are given by the spiritual master and the representatives of the spiritual master, it is your duty to carry those out. So not being the doer means you understand it is by the mercy of Krishna that I'm able to do that. Not being the doer doesn't mean I'm just sit in some solitary place. Well, I'm not the doer. I can't do anything because I'm not the doer. No. It means you do it understanding it's only by the mercy of Krishna that it can actually happen. That's how you do it. You must do it. Did Arjuna not being the doer mean he put down, I'm not the doer, throw his arrows down? No. He engaged very aggressively in that battle, understanding that it's only by the mercy of Krishna that these arrows are hitting their targets. He fired arrows like crazy at those enemy soldiers. But he understood it's by Krishna's mercy they're hitting their target. That's what it means not to be the doer. You engage very aggressively in your service to establish Krishna consciousness on this planet. But you understand it's by the mercy of Krishna that it's happening, not by my doing. That's what it means not to be the doer. You understand?
But at the same time, Maharaj, there can be some anxieties as well. Like for example, yesterday, if I were to host the home program and there was so much traffic in the airport, and to get to the home program, there was a lot of anxiety involved for me to...
Well, you have to... That's transcendental anxiety. How to serve Lord Chaitanya's movement the best possible way. Sometimes we're greatly in anxiety because things are messed up, you see. It's like my microphone went bad on me. It's a very good mic that does a very first class job of making these recordings. I got to go Vinda Valley and it was malfunctioning. So that was a great cause of anxiety for me. Not for my sense gratification, but I want the best possible preaching that I can do, that it can have the best impact on people, you see. But then this morning, Krishna blessed me with the end. My mind is very disturbed about it because I wasn't able to get a good recordings of these so many lectures I gave in Govinda Valley. In the class last night also, I wasn't able to get a first class recording. But this morning, Krishna, I was in greatly anxiety. What to do? And this morning, Krishna blessed me. I understood what was wrong with the microphone. I was able to fix it. And now it works perfectly well. So that anxiety I had was transcendental. That I wanted the preaching should go on in the best possible way, but now it's being impeded by this defective microphone. So that anxiety was very good anxiety. Krishna blessed me for that anxiety by showing me how to fix the problem, you see. So we should, if the things aren't going in a first-class way, we must be in anxiety about it. We must care about it. Because it's our duty to do our service in a first-class way, not tenth-class way. So that anxiety is very good. It is transcendental anxiety. Such anxiety purifies the heart and endears us to Krishna. And the more we become dear to Krishna, the more we become peaceful and happy. So actually one should embrace transcendental anxiety. The more you become in anxiety, how to spread this Krishna consciousness movement in a first-class way, that becomes transcendental ecstasy. In the material world, anxiety is a source of distress. In Krishna consciousness, anxiety becomes a source of great transcendental bliss. You understand?
But still we have to tolerate it. That anxiety is...
We should take it as a blessing. Krishna's put me in this quagmire, this difficult situation. It's a chance for me to increase my shelter, my feelings of surrender, my feelings of dependence on his shelter. One should see it as a great blessing. You see. One should never become devastated, but one should see everything as an opportunity to become more and more and more and more surrendered to Krishna.
At the same time, not getting pride or arrogant.
Huh?
At the same time, not getting pride and arrogant, that will lead to false ego.
Pride has to be given up. Pride is the most dangerous enemy we have. We should always feel very meek and humble that I'm fully dependent on the mercy of Guru and Krishna to save me from my pride and arrogance. The fact is we are infected with pride and arrogance right now. That's a fact. That pride, that arrogance is our greatest enemy. We have to beg Krishna to free us from this pride and arrogance. It's causing us to suffer so much unnecessary distress and anxiety, this pride and arrogance, that I am the center of the universe. Everything revolves around me. If it's enjoyable to me, it's good. If it's not enjoyable to me, it's bad. This is called pride. I am the center. We have to remember Krishna is the center. I'm just a humble servant of Krishna, you see. You should never become proud. Prabhupada warned us in deity worship, he said, don't be puffed up. You're dealing with Krishna. You see, we have to always remember that I am nothing. I am nothing. Any other question? Yeah?
What is the difference between false ego and the real ego?
False ego means I am the center, I am great. Real ego means I am the eternal servant of Krishna. False ego is I am this body, I am this mind, I am the center of enjoyment. That's false ego. I am the eternal servant of Krishna. That's the real ego. So now 9 o'clock has arrived, and we will stop this. There is another session coming up. So any questions you have, anybody has questions that pop in your mind during the day, write them down and bring them to the next session. We'll be happy to answer all your questions as much as time will allow. And so we'll see you all at the next session. When does that begin?
10:30. We can start 10:30 if that's okay with you.
10:30? Okay, we'll be back in an hour and a half.
Yeah, so we have an hour and a half for breakfast, Shadam.
We have an hour and a half for breakfast and free time.
Yeah, and we can do either here or if you prefer, you can do on one-to-one basis depending upon how you all feel comfortable. It's okay with me.
So, yeah, it's fine. We can hear yeah, to
and after
so
that, if you still want to have private here. Time, they can have
yeah. Yeah.
But it's a question and answer session then.
When is this next?
That starts at 10:30 and goes until 10:30 until
half past one. Okay, 10:30 until it's needed basically, but we have aimed to finish at 1:30 because we have other commitments.
Okay then. So everybody who wants to go deeper into this process of how to fully awaken your enlightened consciousness that you are separated from now, that enables you to associate with Krishna face to face, eye to eye at every minute, come at 10:30. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.